This is the third and final instalment of our mini-series about the Clive Treacy Review. Clive died in January 2017. What followed was an extraordinary campaign by his family to have the circumstances about not just his death, but his whole life looked into and published. And the Clive Treacy Review was eventually published in December 2021. I'm joined today by Beverly Dawkins, OBE, Independent Chair of the Review, Hafsa Ali of MLCSU, and a very special guest, Elaine Clark, who's Clive's sister. So the review was published in December, just before Christmas in 2021. And I've got to ask you, Hafsa, reviews are published all the time, so what?
That was the question that we were faced with. So we had this review. We'd spent, you know, a year and a half in the making, 52 recommendations against 10 themes. And those recommendations were to national bodies. They were to NHS England. And they were also to all health and care systems across the whole of the country. So we had quite a task. And, you know, NHS England approached us, having been involved in undertaking the review alongside Beverly, to help them look at how we can implement these findings. And initially, the standard, you know, number one, I should probably say, is often that doesn't happen. Usually we'll hand the report back to the commissioners of a review, and sometimes unfortunately they do get shelved, you know, and the kind of the effort to look at how we can make them work doesn't always happen. So I really commend NHS England that they pushed this out into thinking about how they deliver all those recommendations. But the challenge was, well, so what, like you say, what do we do with this many recommendations, particularly to organisations that we have no authority, or NHS England had no authority to make them do any of these things. Some of those were Royal Colleges, you know, national bodies like the Resus Council, and of course, as I said, you know, ICSs up and down the country. So usually what happens when this kind of report emerges with recommendations is what NHS are really good at, and as we know, local government is often good at, is producing really detailed Excel spreadsheets that describe all of the recommendations, and they send out lots of lovely requests to all the organisations to say, tell us how you're going to meet this. We'll produce a massive document, and then we track them. Every 6 months, we ask people to send us updates. Now, we were clear that that really wouldn't have the impact that we needed. Yes, we could probably do that, and with a reasonable push, we could probably get organisations to help us. But just you know, delivering on very specific actions in a time-limited way, we figured that isn't really going to cut it. So rather, we went about thinking about how do we start to embark on a conversation with some of those big-ticket organisations.
How do we make this a living thing?
Absolutely.
And make a difference. So what's so different?
So I think what was different was a couple of things. Number one, we realised that promoting the report wasn't just about making sure that everyone knew it existed. Clive's story and the way in which we told it became a fantastic output in itself, an outcome in itself. It galvanised people. And, you know, some of our colleagues in NHS England have talked about a movement. It created a bit of a movement, really. You know, across so many disciplines, we talked to adult social care staff, we talked to independent and NHS inpatient providers, we talked to commissioners up and down the, you know, country and across the Midlands. We talked to nurses, we talked to epilepsy specialists. We have been talking to people non-stop since this report was published, and the response has been phenomenal. People have been really taken, hearts and minds have really been won in terms of this work. And so people have gone away to think about, right, how does this relate to me, from board to ward, if you like, from, you know, from at all levels, how does this relate to me and what I do, and how can I change that? So we've got examples of hospitals talking about how they've introduced this into their thinking around their training, and a kind of board level using this as reflective practice. To epilepsy nurses, most recently, but, you know, Elaine and I had the great pleasure of being invited by epilepsy nurses across the Black Country, where we're sitting right now, who'd come together to say, well, actually, what can we do as practitioners on the front line to change the way we work to make life safer and better for people with learning disabilities? So it's been really quite a journey.
So, Elaine, this report was published just before Christmas. It could have all been a bit anticlimactic, couldn't it? But what was your determination to get from this?
You're absolutely right, and that is a feeling felt by the family and not by the want of all of those that, you know, are supporting us to come so far and to, you know, to supported Clive to come this far. You know, from a family point of view, we could have experienced what most families experience, is that the report was published and that is it. So given the timing of the year, a well-required break of all was required. And then in the new year, I think many probably were expecting something, but Asha was very honest about there's no manual for what next. But I was adamant there's going to be a next. So, and so was all involved. We just had to work it out. So that gap created a conscious group. And I don't think any other word could have started that movement, really. Because that's exactly what we found, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, going back to what I was saying about this was more than just as big as it was, a number of recommendations, a body of actions that we needed to complete. It was more about asking system partners across, you know, and, you know, providers, all the organisations involved in supporting people with a learning disability to reflect about what this is telling them and think about the change that they need to make. So I will say, when we did first publish the report, we went into a bit of bureaucratic overdrive, as we often do. So I, you know, found myself huddled away. You know, it was Christmas, thinking, wow, you know, myself and the regional director for NHS England, we had a kind of heavy, we felt a real heavy burden, actually, to do right by Clive, to do right by Elaine. And we tucked ourselves away and we started to go and meet with all of these very senior people. We know we were able to draw on linkages through NHS England to meet with, you know, probably very senior people across the organisations that we'd tasked to do stuff and started conversations with them. We were busily writing out to a meeting with all of the, you know, nationally, the Learning Disability and Autism Programme, Learning Disability Autism senior responsible officers across the Midlands, and doing lots and lots of work. And then come January, Beverly contacted me and said, Hafsha, you know, I think that we need to think about how do we get Elaine involved in this? She's just not sure what's next. So we did that thing that we often do really well in, you know, with all well-meaning purpose. We went away and started to try and get this all moving, and we'd left Elaine behind. And that's where the conscience group came about. Because again, what we'd normally do is we'd have a we'd have a structure, we'll have a governance structure, we'll create a board and we'd create some stakeholders and we'd start to track stuff. And we thought, no, we can't have that. Actually, what we did was we said, we will pick people who have got real passion to drive change. So we weren't even all that kind of systematic about it. We pulled together some real people that we knew that were going to hold us to account and hold ourselves to account. And Elaine was at the forefront of that group. And so that's what we've done for the past year and a half, 2 years, really. That group's kind of been a place where we've kind of looked and said, right, how are things going? Is it working? Let's find out a bit more about what's happening as a result of this recommendation. Some of that stuff's working really well. Some of it started well. There's a lot more to go. Some of it's not working very well at all. And that's the kind of conversation that's chivvied us along, really.
Beverly, the independent chair, the review's published, that's it, job done. But 2 years later, you're sitting in a room with me still talking about it, and you're in the process of writing a follow-up report called Clive's Way. But this isn't just about writing reports, is it? It's about delivering tangibles.
Yes, for me, it was also just as important that this wasn't another report that got stuck on a shelf. I've met lots of reports like that in my career, and I guess, you know, Clive got my heart and mind as well, really, and Elaine. And I just felt very passionate about continuing to support what was happening and to get out and co-present with Elaine and tell the story in the best way we possibly can, because it feels like, well, it's unfinished business and it's going to roll, I think, for a very long time, but it's been a fantastic opportunity to stay involved. Has felt really important.
And Clive's Way, what is that aimed at? When will that come out? When will that be published?
So it's looking like that will be in the new year, around sort of March or April time. ADAS have been tasked to help us with that, and there's going to be a conference. But again, just by virtue of the title, I think you can probably tell that what we're aiming to do is to tell the rest of the story rather than to write a very sort of structured report. And I think what it does is to tell the story of how we have managed to engage people's hearts and minds, and the different ways that people have stepped up and engaged with Clive's story, and to set some challenges for people to continue thinking about Clive's story in the work they're doing with others. So again, it's written in a style perhaps that's consistent with the review, aimed at just continuing to engage people in the work.
And Elaine, let's be clear, Clive's life was not tragic, but some of the ways he was treated were pretty tragic. What struck me is that you seem to be quite a unique team. You've sort of three musketeers. And what you're determined is that Clive will have a legacy.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we've all got that legacy. Obviously, Elaine's got a personal legacy, and Beverly has got is equally drawing on Clive's life. But from our perspective, for MLCSU, I guess I'd like to, on behalf of MLCSU, thank Elaine and thank Clive, because actually learning from Clive's life and the work that we've done is playing a massive role in every single piece of work that we now go on to do in our service to transform and work with our partners to transform learning disability and autism services. There is not a single piece of work that is current or that has been since and that will be going forward that isn't informed by that learning. It absolutely is. I actively take him into meetings, and he is an absolute resource to me, and it's a real gift that I can bring him into those meetings and I can talk, because when I talk about Clive, people do listen.
Beverly, do you think this is going to make a difference to the way people with learning disabilities, but also their families, are listened to?
I really hope so, because I think probably the biggest takeaway from the review and from Clive's Way is just how important it is to listen to people like Clive and their families, and to really understand what matters to them and what matters about how they're cared for. And I think it's really important that when somebody dies and these circumstances are, you know, are looked at, that the voice of that person and their family are central to everything that happens in that review and all that follows.
So Elaine, what do you think would be different for Clive if he entered the system today instead of when he did?
Honestly, at this stage in 2023, if Clive had entered the system today, I don't think a lot would have changed, because it's evident how many Clives there are, how many families are in his position, and how many people are still not able to access healthcare, community care, and a quality of life.
You seem to have a real drive and determination to ensure that things are really going to change, as Hafsha said, from the board to the ward. How do you maintain that energy?
I think we all know what drives me. Grief, first and foremost. Anger before. Just the mere fact that it isn't just for Mum and Dad and Clive. It's for all Clives that are still out there. It's for all Mum and Dads of Clives. I'm personally not somebody who sees a wrong and let it stay that way. I want to be part of a right, and we'll do it the right way. But I think I'm going to let Clive drive me today, as he's always done. Our youngest brother made it very clear, and he's absolutely correct. Every conversation that Clive started always started or concluded with the same two words in it: hope and families.
If you would like to know more about Midlands and Lancashire Commissioning Support Unit, go to our website, mlcsu.co.uk.